Blog Talk Radio.
When you don't go to Geico.com.
Man is on a quest to play God, to control the weather and use it as a weapon. Lightning, torrential rains, hurricanes, targeted at the enemy. By spraying metal oxide into the air above enemy skies, then directing ELF waves from HARP to heat those metal oxides, the temperature of the sky is raised to more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, preventing the accumulation of water vapor that would otherwise form clouds and produce rainfall. The ELF waves HARP produces bounce off the ionosphere and are able to curve around the Earth over the horizon to the ground, making any point on the globe well within reach. This U.S. Air Force report graphically outlines the military's desire to exploit and manipulate the weather for the purposes of war by the year 2025. According to one of the most harrowing lines in this report, quote, "Weather modification is a force multiplier with tremendous power that could be exploited across the full spectrum of war-fighting environments. With our deadline of 2025 quickly approaching, the future of weather warfare is cause for concern.
It could rain in the desert, and you could have a heat wave in the Arctic.
It could plunge North America into an ice age."
They first appear to be simply contrails coming from high-flying jet airplanes. But these trails linger in the sky for many hours, some for even an entire day, forming an artificial cloud.
Chemtrails are deliberately sprayed by high-flying U.S. Air Force tankers, dispersing chemicals into the atmosphere. We have an FAA representative, in fact, a high government official, a person we came to call Deep Sky, attesting to the truth and the reality behind chemtrails. He described this program of spraying chemical trails at high altitudes in so-called commanded airspace, where commercial flights are routed around and beneath tanker airplanes belonging to the U.S. Air Force.
The theory is that chemtrails are being used in conjunction with HARP. By spraying metal oxides into the air above enemy skies, then directing ELF waves from HARP to heat those metal oxides, the temperature of the sky is raised to more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, preventing the accumulation of water vapor that would otherwise form clouds and produce rainfall. The ELF waves HARP produces bounce off the ionosphere and are able to curve around the Earth over the horizon to the ground, making any point on the globe well within reach.
One of the dangers in spreading chemtrails is that it acts as a desiccant and further dries the air. In other words, these chemical particulates can dry up the atmosphere and induce drought.
Some of the theory dates back 100 years to legendary electrical inventor Nikola Tesla. Tesla theorized that if ELF waves could be beamed into the ionosphere, in the upper reaches of the atmosphere, man could change the course of weather. The ELF waves would create heat, altering the molecular structure of the ionosphere, pushing it out into space.
When you heat a certain region of the ionosphere, it literally pushes it up and creates what would look like a column of space, and the lower atmosphere then rushes in to fill that space, and as it does, it changes the flow of jet streams within the region, pressure systems, and in that respect, it could manipulate weather.
Still, it's no coincidence that the United States began building its own mysterious array of antennas in February 1992. They are located in Gokona, Alaska. The project is called HARP.
HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, originally a joint effort of the Air Force and Navy in cooperation with a number of academic institutions.
It is today the world's largest radio broadcasting station, but it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It uses a unique patented ability to focus the energy coming out of the antenna field and injects that energy into a spot at the very top of the atmosphere in a region called the ionosphere.
HARP is comprised of 180 antennas, approximately 72 feet tall, linked together to function as one giant steerable antenna. Steerable because it can aim millions of watts of ELF waves into one tiny patch of the atmosphere.
the amount of energy we're talking about here is 3.6 million watts. To give you an idea of what that is, the largest legal AM radio station in North America is 50,000 watts. HARP is 72,000 50,000 watt radio stations injecting their entire output into a spot that's about 12 miles across by about 2.5 miles deep by about 90 miles up.
This is where HARP is pointing. It's an area located roughly 300 miles from Anchorage. The U.S. military says HARP is merely being used to study the physical and electrical properties and behavior of the ionosphere for both civilian and defense purposes. But another theory has surfaced. The intense energy...
And so we could continue. This is a 10-minute clip, but this is actually not the topic of the program. But we wanted to revisit HARP and chemtrails and see years later, because that was such a hot topic really about 10 years ago, 5 to 10 years ago. 5 to 10 years later, where are we with that topic? Have we moved past it? Are we distracted and, you know, have to focus on so many other things just to maintain life that we are no longer focusing or paying attention to what's happening? Well, the reality is it's still happening. If you watch the sky and look at the effect of the fallout that we experience, and because basically HARP, it is theorized, even though I didn't finish that clip, and I'm not sure if that's where this clip was going, but the oxides that are being used in the chemtrails are purported to have a behavior control effect. So that may be a conspiracy theory, but hey, look around. Don't we see that behavior is majorly controlled? So it's something to think about. So our topic for this evening is something that I'm not sure that we would be able to cover in the space of 25 or 35 minutes, but we are going to open the conversation. There were so many ways to approach the topic of death, if you believe in death, life after life, transition, so many different ways. And one of the things that I discovered in the process of preparing for this program is that everyone feels very strongly about their belief about death and dying. So it is one of those topics that raises great passion in terms of people believing what it is that they believe about death and dying. And so it's one of those topics that you may want to avoid, like, you know, unless, well, I was going to say like politics and diet and things of that nature that tend to have polarizing effects on people. So one of the things that I learned, as I was saying, in researching this program is that those beliefs are very deeply entrenched and they're very strong. And so what we're going to do is just look at two or three ways to find out the truth about what happens with the death. So this program is not so much about the death of the physical body. You can find lots of information out there in cyberspace, on the internet, etc., about the decomposition of the physical body and, you know, what happens with that. That's not the topic of this particular program. What we're looking at more is the soul or the consciousness, what happens after the physical body ceases to function. Does the consciousness continue? Is there a time frame on that? Where is Western science on the concept of what happens once the physical body stops operating? So we're going to start there with the concept, the very narrow. We're going to start narrow and go wide. So typically in Western science, in the framework that many have been exposed to, they have been taught that once the physical body ceases to exist, that consciousness ceases to exist. So even in mainstream science now, it has been determined that the consciousness lives on past the physical death for at least longer than they thought. So this opens the way to the possibility that it exists as the consciousness even beyond that. But let's take a few minutes and look at what science, as in Western science, is saying about the most recent discoveries that they have regarding consciousness after the death of the physical vessel.
Scientists have proof that there is life after death. Well, sort of. What they have discovered is that consciousness may continue even after death. Now, this is a subject that's been treated with a lot of skepticism over the years, but in the most extensive study of its kind, scientists at the University of Southampton in the UK have spent nearly 4 years examining more than 2,000 people who suffered cardiac arrests at 15 hospitals in the UK, the US, and Austria, and have found that 40% of people who recovered described having some form of awareness at the time when they were declared clinically dead. Now, as I said, Mark, the perception is, or the current wisdom is, that death occurs about 20 to 30 seconds after your heart stops beating. And the research indicates that it goes on for significantly longer than that. And this is what the sort of top line takeaway from the report is. Quote, "The evidence thus far suggests that in the first few minutes after death, consciousness is not annihilated. Whether it fades away afterwards, we do not know. But right after death, consciousness is not lost." So this is coming, they got this, as I said, you have to kind of take a little bit of a leap of faith here. But it was conducted by prominent scientists in a sensible, you know, studied fashion. It wasn't just, you know, it is anecdotal, but...
Okay, so I just wanted to intro that topic from that perspective because, as I said, we're going to start narrow and go wide. So starting with the narrowest perspective, which is mainstream Western science, they have quote-unquote discovered that consciousness does not end with the death of the physical body as they had so-called determined for many, many centuries. So I have opened the line for my co-host, Dr. Jatta. Welcome, Dr. Jatta. How are you this evening?
Fine, thank you. Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and thank you, as always, for taking time out of your busy life to be a part of the Community Love Power Show. So you can see our topic this evening, Dr. Jatta, and it is a vast and wide topic. There's no way that we can cover it in the space of the parameters of this particular program. But I wanted to just start the dialogue and the conversation. We're going to spend a lot of time on this program looking at the Islamic perspective of life and the afterlife, but starting in a more narrow focus with Western science and this new determination that consciousness extends past the death of the physical body. What's your take on that? Is that something that's relevant? Is that real? Or what do you think about that?
Well, I'm glad to see that they have some instruments to measure that. The unseen to us is the great unknown. There's more unseen than there is seen in the creation we live in. The billions of galaxies we live in, more is unseen than is seen to us. So death is one of those unseen things the human being has to face. It's a reality that we will all face that one day. And the sages over the years have come, those who were privy to see the unseen, with information for us regarding the unseen. So I'm glad that science has a way of measuring the unseen. And as time goes on, I'm sure that the knowledge has been left for humankind over the years from the sages, those who are close to the Creator, would probably jive more with the scientific knowledge as time goes on. Again,
yes.
It's a very, very subjective subject. I think it would be good to cover all the ideas from the different peoples that have lived, the different religions, the different cultures. Everybody has a point of view. It's not for me to argue with anybody about that. I follow the instructions left by Muhammad, peace be upon him, who it says that the unseen was revealed to certain people, he being one of them, and the death was something that's covered very, very heavily by Muhammad. It said that we should think of death once a day, once an hour, once every minute, because it's really the reality of us. The reason being is we are not just a physical being. The senses will be curtailed when the soul is taken. The eyes would no longer see this creation. The ears would no longer hear this creation. Nobody can bring that back. And the journey then of the soul, which is on loan to the human being, our spirit, our consciousness is on loan to us because we all have to give it back. And in giving it back, we have a responsibility to treasure and take care of that being, that essence that's been given to us. Because it is said that the soul has the essence, certain parts of the essence of the Creator. So when we hand the soul back, we are supposed to hand it back in a good way. A good way, somebody may say, well, what is that? If you go to India, the philosophy there is to seek wealth and prosperity, seek pleasures, and at the end of this, seek enlightenment. So our job here, as far as the large body of knowledge by mankind, is to live a life, fulfill the good desires that we have from the souls in taking care and not being in moderation and caring for each other. So when we develop this consciousness as we live, and hopefully we will have some enlightenment before we pass through, in gratitude for having the opportunity to live with our spirit, our breath. That's quite long-winded. I'm going to sign off from there. I don't know where that's going to go.
So, thank you so much, because it was so imbued with wisdom and the knowledge of the years of your observation of many lives on the planet and seeing many come and many go. So, you know, not only that, you have given the source or the basis of where your knowledge comes from. Let's take a moment and listen to the scholar, the U.S.-born scholar, I think U.S., Hamza Youssef, as he talks about the afterlife. We're not going to go for the entire clip, but let's catch a few minutes and come back and look further into this topic. Hamza Youssef, the afterlife.
Now, what happens then, from the Islamic perspective, when we die? Obviously, in pre-Islamic cultures, the Arabians, most fascinating aspect of Arabian culture, the Arabs did not believe in an afterlife. Really interesting, because most cultures have a concept of the afterlife. The Arabs did not believe in an afterlife. They said, نَمُوتُ وَنَحْيَا وَمَا يُهْلِكُنَا إِلَّا الدَّهَرُ. We live and we die and nothing kills us but time. The Arab said, and will we be decayed bones, dust in the earth, and brought back to life? They say, who's going to revive these dead and decayed bones? The Quran says, قُلْ يُحْيِيهَا الَّذِي أَنْشَأَهَا أَوَّلَ مَرَّةً. The one who brought them to life the first time, he'll do it the second time. The Quran says, We created you the first time. The commentators say, second time around is always easier. Right? If it was done once, it can be done again. Now, how did the Quran deal with this this belief? Because it's very interesting that the Arabs didn't believe this. How did it deal with it? The way that it dealt with it was it told the Arabs to look at the dead earth. And it said, we take a dead earth, send down rain from the heavens, it mixes with the seeds, and we bring the earth back to life again, and like that, you will be brought back. Now, this analogy, there is a hadith that says that the Prophet Muhammad said, every human being has what's called ajb al-dhanab. The wondrous tail. And it's at the tip of the coccyx. And it's the seed of the human being. So the Muslims believe that there is a seed that every human being has. And like seeds are very interesting because they're very hard to destroy. Right? You swallow seeds, they come out the other end. Hydrochloric acid doesn't break them down. In fires, seeds stay. Right, forests that are burnt down come back to life because of seeds that are there that aren't destroyed. Drought comes, kills everything but the seeds. When the rain comes back, it comes back to life. Now, the belief of the Muslims is that every human being has a seed, and that seed will not be destroyed. We don't know where it is or what it is. The hadith indicates that it's in the coccyx. But we don't know what size it is, what it looks like, nothing like that. But from that seed, every human being will be recreated from a divine rain. And it's interesting that we deny resurrection, and yet our own culture is talking about recreating human beings from one cell. Bringing back the entire human being by cloning one cell, because all of the information about you is contained in one of your cells.
Very powerful, and we could go further, but in the interest of time, we're going to stop that there, and I've opened up the line again for Dr. Jatta. We're all here again. So, Dr. Jatta, a seed at the base of the coccyx. You know, and that's fascinating as I'm listening, because I'm recalling some information that I have been exposed to, that there at the base of the coccyx, there is the original cell. The original, we started off as one cell. When the egg and sperm unite, and that is a base cell from which, you know, duplicates, it replicates and replicates into the millions. But the base or the source of it is at the tip of the coccyx. And so, you know, that information appears elsewhere in addition to within the Quran. So what's your comment on that seed and the ability, the fact that Allah can bring us completely back from a cell based on that seed?
Well, my comment is this. Life, many similitudes are left for humankind. Similitudes are wisdom that's taught to us by observing certain things. And I think Brother Hamza there brought forth one similitude from the Quran to make us look to see that things like this are possible and right in front of our noses and our eyes daily. I don't dispute that. And there are many, many, many other similitudes that could be drawn to verify. Somebody could then intuitively say, well, yes, definitely there is something can be produced again and again and again and again, just like the creation is produced again and again and again. The galaxies are produced again and again and again. So the spiritual journey of everybody is to observe, to use the faculties that we've been given, the senses, the brain, the eyes, the ears, the reasoning that we have, to come to certain conclusions. And I think any reasonable person can see that things can be recreated. And however, I think we're dealing here with the physical creation. The physical creation is what we're dealing with. The consciousness now is something else. You know, I think, is that correct?
I would say so. You know, even based on how we entrenched the program with the mainstream science clip. So after the death of the physical vessel or the physical body, that the consciousness does continue. So I would say that there is a something beyond the physical, and when the physical passes, there's still consciousness for at least a short time.
Mm-hmm. Now that's interesting, because that position there, the coccyx area, is akin to most disciplines that deal with the orbits, the orbit of the body, the orbit of energy. The Don Dien or the Tantien or the Hara or these places, which is, it's supposed to be an inch and a half below the navel and an inch and a half behind the navel, which is where you cultivate that chi or that energy that we have. And when that becomes manifest, we can use that innate energy we have to heal and to perform good work. So that's really interesting.
It is a very fascinating connection, because I was also referring to the same thing. So this wisdom that's in the Quran has been reflected in other systems as well. So, you know, that's good to observe, this ancient wisdom that is available to us through the Quran and through the study of the physical vessel from the ancient sciences is the perspective that I'm referring to. So now, that being said, it does give a different perspective on the thought of dying or the concept of dying. So we had actually titled this program Life After Life as our subtitle instead of Life After Death. So for those who may be facing, because as we said in the beginning, we're all will be facing at some point, sooner or later, the death of ourselves, our physical body, the end of the life that we have known. So since we are all connected somehow, we have loved ones, etc., what does that imply for those loved ones who might be in the process of making their transition? What kind of insight can what we have briefly discussed here provide someone who is in the process of actually leaving the earth, and we are privy to share that experience with them? And I wanted to just point out that the energy or by the bedside of someone who is making a transition is a very powerful vortex. It's like birth. Anyone who's been present at birth can feel the intensity of energy that happens with birth. With the death of the physical body, the other end of the spectrum of our life experience, there's also a very strong energy or force, spiritual energy, or there's a strong dynamics, or however we want to describe it. It's something that we can feel, something that's palpable. There's a shift you know, somehow I may not be able to articulate it clearly, but it's something certainly that is felt. And so saying that, and with that experience, you know, it gives insight into what's actually happening during this process. So what do we say? How do we interact with someone who's making a transition? Let's take a look at this concept, and then we'll come back and discuss it.
Well, you know, I don't think there's one answer to that question, other than to say you might take cues from that individual. Some people are in denial. Some people retreat. Others desperately want to connect. And I believe personally that the ability to connect is life-giving. And that somebody who is already feeling isolated wants people to reach out. I mean, just a call. And if it's a bad time, she'll say, you know what, I can't really talk now, but thank you so much for the call. Call me later, or I'll call you. Or if somebody rings the doorbell and the nurse answers the door and says, you know, she's on the commode, it's not a good time, come back later. When she comes back, you know, the dying person is apt to really embrace that opportunity. I will tell you, and I wrote about this in one of the chapters regarding hospice care and the volunteers who were angels on earth. When my mother was bedridden and hospice volunteers were coming, they brought to her the stories of their lives. You know, one of the volunteers had a severely disabled granddaughter, had some form of muscular dystrophy, and couldn't speak, couldn't walk well, but was thriving as a high school student. So this aide would tell, or volunteer would tell my mother, the story of her granddaughter, and talk about this and talk about that. And in those moments, my mother was listening, and she was sharing, and she was caring. You know, she was interacting. She was being very human. I guess that's my point. She was allowed to use her emotions. She wasn't able to get up and walk around the house necessarily, but she could listen to the story, and she could say, oh, Doris, I understand that. And, you know, what a great child, or aren't you good to be doing that? It was sharing, and in those moments, she was alive. She was in her bed, but she was alive emotionally. So I think, you know, as difficult as it may be for us to know what to say, what do I say, how do I act, just go. Just be present and see how it goes and take cues. And sometimes you don't have to say anything. You can just say, you know, Linda, I'm here. I just want you to know that I'm thinking of you, and touch her. Put your hand on her hand and see where it goes. And even say, you know what, Linda, I don't know, you know, what's the right thing to do. I just want you to know that I'm here if you need me. I don't want to be in the way. And then see what she says. Because we don't know. We don't know. And what worked for Tom isn't going to work for Harry. What was right for my mother may not be right for your mom. It's different. But just, I think the message is that emotional connection is life-giving. And the ability to emote, to feel emotions, to empathize, is very, very life-giving. And it was really important for my mom.
And so we get the point with that. That was short, sweet, and to the point. It's about connecting and being present with the person that we are close to that is making their transition. They want to know that someone is present. They want to know that they're loved and that there is a connection. There is no cookie cutter set of statements to provide to someone who is making the transition from the physical body. As the recent clip alluded to, what may work for my mother may not work for your father. So it's about being connected with ourselves enough to be able to extend ourselves, to just be present. There are times when no words are necessary, just being present with the person. And you have to know the person to know even that they may be making that transition. It's not, making a physical transition is not a cookie cutter experience either. Some people are quite active in active dying. They may be wheeling themselves or walking up and down They might still be in the kitchen making food. They may still have a sense of humor and crack jokes, and still they're still the person that they've always been. And even though there may be some debilitation or it's some regression in terms of the physical presence, even by virtue of this program, we have noted that there is a consciousness that extends beyond the physical. So that person is still 100% the person they have always been. Now, Dr. Jatta, in your years of doing the work that you have done, have you, what are your comments? What have you seen regarding people who are making actively the transition and the different forms that it comes in? And what do we say to someone that we love and we both know that that person is making their transition?
Well, the person is somebody that we've known, and they're still living this life. You know, so we should be, if we're loving to somebody or if we have a human connection to somebody, they may be moving towards the transition, but they're still living this life. They still hear and they still feel, and all of the senses are still here. They may be waning. So all be to say, we should be saying the things that we should be saying to each other if they're living in a loving way, because they're still here with us.
Great point. And I absolutely concur with that. The people that I have loved, that I have experienced or am experiencing their transition, they're the same person. We have the same relationship. This is a very important time in their life, just like other very important times in their lives. And they want people that care and truly care for them as a person that they are, imperfect in their physical form, just to be loved and accepted, and it to be okay with that. So that's, I guess, in a nutshell, what it is that we want to say to someone who is dying. And what about someone whose loved one is making their transition? We really got to speed it up now because we're coming to the top of the hour and we still have one more topic. But what we say to someone, and how can we be present for someone whose close loved one is making their transition? Of all the information that we've been able to briefly look at this evening, is any of it comforting to the one who may be in the presence of witnessing the transition of their loved one? What's your take on that? Would that be helpful, in your observation, Dr. Jatta, to have the knowledge and information that we've briefly been able to touch on this evening?
I'm sure people could get value from what we've expressed this evening. My plan is, or my idea is this, that I think we look at things in a finality way, a final way, which is, in other words, this person's leaving, so I have to tell them everything that I want to tell them. We should be telling them now while we're still here. It shouldn't be that last moment that we're going to be telling somebody something or expressing certain things to them. I mean, to me, you would have wasted the life. So whatever resentment or situations you have, you should say that up immediately before we even go to bed. And we should be expressing ourselves in a good way to each other. So that grief or that regret that I didn't do that will not occur for us.
Yes.
In other words, to have some rehearsed speech or knowing what to say at that time, to me, that's really not being conscious with the life before that. Well, that's just me.
Actually,
I don't know about having a script.
That is very well said, and obviously this program is unscripted, you know, which is what I love about it, because it's in the moment, and we do speak from our heart, and you can't really script that. But, you know, the whole concept of the fact that it's about being present with your loved one at all moments, through all aspects of the life of your loved one, that's the really important aspect. And so that's where we're going with it. We want to, I think what we're going to have to do, because we're looking at the top of the hour and there's a couple of things I want to share, we're going to have to take this to a part two. And the reason I say that is because there's various aspects that we really have not had the opportunity to explore. And one of those is the concept, because you brought up, we spoke of India earlier today, and when we think of India, we think of the concept, many of us, of reincarnation. We did not even begin to venture on that topic, which is very broad and is very prevalent in various cultures, and some don't. So, you know, so we want to look at that just dispassionately and passionately, meaning just look at it and see, where does that fit in? Does that fit in to the glorious creation that we get to experience while we're here? And the other aspect is, what is consciousness? We talked about, we just, you know, threw the, we bandied the word about during the program, well, consciousness extends after the death of the physical body, and consciousness is what that person maintains, that person, no matter what is in their, what their physical form is. But we didn't actually take time to look at, well, what is consciousness? How, what is that? How does that connect us to the universe in general, to creation in general? What is that? Is it just the function of the brain? And so I think we came to the conclusion on this program that it isn't. And I have to put a pitch out for our show page, which is blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing. And we have over 10 years of archives. And if you scroll back, you will find some really fascinating programs that we did earlier on consciousness, and also the blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution, where we went into great depth about the aspects of consciousness and the nano capability of the brain to operate on many levels simultaneously, where we are just beginning to tap the surface of that. So I encourage you to go to those programs and get even more insight into the topic of consciousness. But what we're going to do when we pick up the next program, we're going to investigate the concept of reincarnation. There's a lot of, because the belief is strong, there is a lot of so-called corroboration within the Hindu culture of people being born and being able to speak knowledgeably of lives that and details they would only have known had they actually lived. So what is that? And how can that be explained? So we want to explore that. That and consciousness will be the topic for our upcoming program. We want to put a plug in for our buy-in club, and that's how we're going to top off the program, with the exception of the musical aspect. But I'm not going to play the clip. Dr. Jatsa and I are going to give you a few minutes on the buying club and just share with you what it is we're purchasing this month, because now is the time. As you know, we operate the Ujamaa Purchasing Collective, and what that is we have pooled our resources to purchase the things that we all already buy. So this is not buying anything new that you're not already buying, but what it does do is give you the opportunity to buy it for less. Pool your resources with others and buy on a wholesale basis, and even with shipping costs and sometimes there's hazmat fees, still paying less than what you pay at the retail store. So we have a cross section of items that we are purchasing for the month. Really, this is actually the October purchase, but we're going to get that out now, within today or tomorrow. And there's a cross section on the website of Ujamaa Purchasing Collective .webs.com. That's Ujamaa, UJAM like Mary, AA, Purchasing Collective .webs.com. If you go there and you check on the, click on the more page and look at what we're ordering, that's not the fullness. Anything that you need, propose it to the buying collective, because we may need it too. This is for, unfortunately, those who are local to us in South Florida, because of shipping costs. So that's Fort Lauderdale and West Palm and Miami-Dade counties, those who are within our listening area. We want you to be a part of it, because it just makes it easier for each and every one of us to pool our resources, meaning our dollar goes further. And there's so many other ways that we can pool our energy. So, you know, join us and go to our website for the clinic, which is the People's Clinic, the number 4TOM.com. Check out what we have coming up. You can also schedule yourself in for an appointment or a consultation via our website, or you can call Dr. Jatta or me. Dr. Jatta, your heartfelt closing words and your contact information, please.
We have to live some lives, so let's live it right, so we have no regrets at the end. The end could be the beginning, if only we knew. Peace.
And your contact info, please, Dr. Jatta?
786.
Your phone number?
786-222-9526. Email Jatamala, Jatamala, number1@gmail.com.
So reach out to us in whatever way is comfortable to you. You can call, you can email, you can text, you can come into the chat room, you can go to our website, and we have our social media on the rise. So join us. We're going to exit with Lonnie Liston Smith, Rejuvenation, and come to the clinic and get yours. As in rejuvenation. This is Yah Elohim. Love you to life. Signing off. And look forward to speaking with you on Sunday as we continue the conversation. Join us. Join us. It won't be the same without wonderful you.